are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And we're also heard on the worldwide,
Well, I don't know. It could be worldwide
web. It could be.
Wild web. Yeah. So thank you so much, Sita, for another fantastic week. Here we are in April, another fantastic week on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And you can hear us on SitaMediaInc.com, all of our archive shows. And, of course, you can hear us on demand on 1510WWBC.com. You just hit that on-demand button. You may have to download something on your phone or on your electronic device, whatever device you're using, but you should be able to get us relatively quickly and hear us live, just like everybody on the radio should hear us live on our one station, 1510 WWBC, and our three FM sister stations here in Brevard County.
And I'm busy looking at my friend Serena Thomas's bio and the questions that we're going to be asking her later. I'm so excited that she's here. We have an action-packed show today, really action-packed, and it's quite an impressive lineup, I have to say. Our friend who called in before, the founder of the Having Kids organization, it's a nonprofit, he's calling in. Carter is the founder of Having Kids. It's a national child welfare organization and was most recently, I have to tell my listeners and you, Ellen, and Serena and Samantha, most recently I was appointed to the board of Having Kids by Carter.
Nice.
Yeah. And we're going to be having our first meeting, which Samantha is going to come over and help me. We're going to do it on Zoom. I just had a Zoom meeting, but I just figured she'll be there with me.
And I think just as a suggestion, you should be telling people that you're part of the organization called Having Kids, because it sounds like you're saying I'm having kids.
I don't mind. I wouldn't mind.
I know.
I can certainly afford them.
You can. But you're on the second generation now. You're letting other people have kids.
But sadly, that shop is closed.
Amen.
Yeah. I made a conscious decision. Honestly, I made a conscious decision to have a tubal ligation after the birth of my third child. Now, I wanted another one, but my husband said, no, when you have children, you have to think about the environment, education, healthcare, food, water, shelter, and who's going to take care of them, and it has to be equal. You can't do for one what you can't do for the other. And, of course, I had Kimberly and Michael from my first marriage, and my husband had BJ, and so we had Jasmine together. At that time, I was thinking, what the heck is he talking about? But, you know, age brings wisdom. And with wisdom comes a lot of thought and a lot of processes to read and understand. And he was absolutely correct.
And they made an excellent choice of putting you on the board.
That's right. So for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, our wonderful friend Serena Thomas is here. And Serena is going to be talking a little bit later about the American Recovery Act.
Rescue
Act. Mm-hmm. More like health insurance rescue.
Yes.
And you're going to be talking a little bit about not so new job anymore with U.S. Health Advisors. You've been with them for quite a while.
Yes, been with them for 5 years now.
I can't believe it. I feel like it was just yesterday you left Brevard. Yeah, so you're going to be talking a little bit about insurance.
It was last week.
The new rates.
Yeah. Right.
And you'll be talking about the rates and how to calculate if you can qualify for the Affordable Care Act and all that good stuff later.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Right. So, but our first segment is with Mr. Carter Dillard, and I think he's on the phone. So without further ado, I'm going to have him say hello to our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And Carter, thank you for taking the time to call in.
Thank you for having me, Sita. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'll be talking with you later on this month on Zoom as well. We're having our first meeting.
We are, and I really appreciate it. Sita's been kind enough to join the board at havingkids.org, and we're excited for her great advice.
Thank you. So I was trying to read your bio or just talk about all the great things you've done. Senior policy advisor. You're also on the, your current job is with the Animal Defense Fund, correct?
Animal Legal Defense Fund, exactly. And I do policy advice there.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself and on how, I mean, you know, you could have had the choice to do anything in the world. And what you're doing is just commendable because not every attorney does what you're doing, but it just inspires so many of us to think about the environment, think about the animals, think about humanity, and think about everybody as one big global community. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved with the Animal Defense Fund.
Thanks for that. I appreciate it. So I actually started out working for the Department of Justice and in the Bush administration. And what I realized was that really when it comes to justice, social justice, things really are interrelated, and that people at the top of what one Nobel laureate Stephen Chu called the power pyramid, people at the top of the pyramid, if you think of lots of people and very few people in power, like a president or celebrities, who really are influencers, it's like a pyramid, that people in that position aren't always interested in social justice. And so I left the Department of Justice and began working with animal protection groups and eventually landed at the Animal Legal Defense Fund because I was interested in not necessarily serving people at the top of that pyramid, but in fact creating conditions that fostered social justice. And that's what the Animal Legal Defense Fund does. And I also work with another organization called HavingKids.org that through humane education and family planning reform tries to foster it as well, because as I said, if we think about social justice in the right way, we see that things really are interconnected, and a lot of the policy changes that we need can help lots of the most vulnerable people at the bottom of that population pyramid at the same time.
You know, sometimes I wish I could bottle and sell what you say and what's on your website, because it's so interesting. And of course, on our show here is very fun and unscripted, and we try to make it as informative and give out valuable information as to anyone who's listening on the web, in their cars, and everywhere. But I like what you all talk about because, you know, rising inequality and the accelerating climate changes have affected children all over the world, not just in the United States. And it's almost like the politicians don't pay attention to that. And that right there is like the core of what we are as human beings on this existence on the planet.
Exactly. Yeah, and a great example of that is that there's now well-established science that rising temperature because of the climate crisis is causing premature births and other negative impacts both on mothers and on children. The impacts are much greater for people at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum. And so climate policy isn't something that impacts that we need equally, right? The wealthy adults are going to fare better than poor children under the climate crisis. So when we talk about climate policy and whether we're dragging our heels or we're choosing things that are conservative instead of robust, we have to remember that the people who are making those choices aren't going to suffer in the same way that children, and especially poor children, will. And it's important to recognize that when we talk about policy choices.
Yeah, and we often hear the words fair thrown around when we talk about taxes. People say, we'll pay you a fair share. When we talk about working, people say, well, pull your weight, do your fair share. But with having kids, you use the word fair, but you use it in a place of love and concern and compassion. When we talk about a fair start, like what is really fair when you're starting a family? How do we educate people before you start a family? How do you plan a family? It's not really about, in this case with having kids, about talking about reproductive rights and the systems, which we all know what that's all about. That's another show. But talk to us a little bit about what is the fair start revolution?
Sure. And I think the easiest way to think of it really goes back to the idea of government and democracy and human rights in general. And the analogy that people have used for a long time is of a social contract. So the idea is that people come together and they agree on the rules under which they'll live, and those rules might get reflected in something like a constitution. And for a long time, that idea was what you call historically static. You would think about some people in the past, like framers of the United States, coming together and making that agreement. Fair Start tries to make that thinking four-dimensional. It tries to bring in time as a factor. So what if we imagine that instead of a social contract in the past, we had some constitution in the past that was written by people we're disconnected from, these godlike founders? What if instead we thought about constitutions as something that was ongoing? We were constituting the country every time children were born, and that when we have a social contract, everybody has to continuously consent or agree to the rules, including the children that are being born, including future generations. If we did that, we think the only thing that would be fair is we start to eliminate distinctions where people have great power over one another. So fairness might mean that instead of simply accepting that there are rich kids and poor kids, and that that's some matter of fortune, we might try to level the playing field between children.
So give everybody a fair shake. So basically,
exactly,
everybody...
Yeah, like fair start line.
Right. You know what you remind me of? When my daughter just had a beautiful baby on the 1st of January, 2021. And I was having a discussion with the physician and the nurses there. And the physician was telling me about all these children that were born in the inner city. And, you know, how many parents walked out of that hospital in despair. Didn't know where they were going to live, didn't know if they had a crib, didn't know how they were going to raise these children. And it's almost like the education for comprehensive sex education wasn't there for some of these people, right? And the nurses were talking about how they can tell which babies are going to go home and be loved and cared for and wanted versus the babies that weren't. And I said, what they need to do is have a contract when a mother becomes pregnant and decides to keep a child. And say, do you care about a job? Check yes or no. Do you care about the environment? Check yes or no. Do you care about voting? Check yes or no. Do you care about clean air, water, sunshine? And that mother begins to think before she gives birth. I think Serena and I had talked about this at dinner a month ago. And what you're saying is have a social contract that makes people think. So they pass it on to the next generation.
Exactly. Yeah, and we call Fair Start, so what we think about it now is currently family planning models are focused on really whatever parents want. You know, parents want to have lots of kids. They want to have kids that are going to be wealthy because they're wealthy, or they're stuck in poverty because the parents are poor. It's really up to the parents. And what we would say is because the person that's impacted the most in the act of having kids is the future child, really we ought to make our systems focused on what future children need. So it's called child-centric family planning. And the system, when we talk about fairness, it's not only economic fairness, so that it's not rich kids and poor kids, we're trying to level the playing field. It's also ecological fairness, because power, the influence other people have over you, can also be reflected to our environment. So it's not fair that children are born today in the horrible conditions of the climate crisis, but children, you know, born 50 years ago, 100 years ago, the people that have helped create the crisis, were born in ecological conditions that were much safer and much healthier. So Fair Start demands that we come up with a climate policy that, in fact, reverses the climate crisis. We're not going to accept some level of climate change because we think that we're, you know, that's okay. If we really want to give kids a fair start, we have to actually reverse it. So it's both social and ecological.
Gotcha. So, you know, as you speak, I'm just wondering, we need your voice at the border, because all these children who are being dropped off at the border, they don't have a fair start. They never had a fair shake to begin with. And how do we now educate people, whether the children or their families qualify for asylum or not, whether they have to go back to their birth country or not, how do we spread your message of a fair start, like, all over the world? How does an average person get involved?
Thanks for asking. And I think that the answer is the United Nations has a international, really universal structure and program for dealing with family planning. But as I said, that structure and program is still really based on growth and it's based on fulfilling parental desire. And what we see is that really the programming has three problems. One, it's patriarchal. We can say we support the idea of parents making free and informed family planning decisions. But in a world where men really exercise undue influence over familial relations, when you do that, all you're doing is really empowering men. Second, the growth and the model is unsustainable. It created the climate crisis in a lot of ways. All of the demand for carbon-producing systems and other climate emission-producing systems comes from the growth that system created. And thirdly, it doesn't have any reflection of equity. It doesn't really say we need to level the playing field between rich and poor kids. In fact, the gap between rich and poor is getting worse. So in clear terms, how would we deal with the border crisis? One step is the United Nations, through the Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, should make a statement that the UN's policy is smaller families, parents delaying until they're ready, and embracing the idea of distributing resources so that every kid gets equal opportunity. The UN's not saying that right now. They're saying it's up to parents. And so the UN is exacerbating the underlying conditions that create the border crisis. And in fact, they're doing it, in our opinion, because that growth creates a lot of income. And the countries that really have sway at the UN want to continue that income, even when the cost is harm to children. Things like border crises, massive inequity, and ecological destruction. So we think one simple thing people could do is lean on Secretary General of the United Nations, lean on Joe Biden to make a statement. We think family planning ought to change. It ought to be based on what children need, which is a fair start in life, both socially and ecologically.
Yeah, and you know, it's almost like it's not what we say, right? It's how we say it. We have to be mindful of what we say as well, because what we see when we talk about children and family planning, then we see it becomes like a big issue with the religious right and the people who say, well, you can't talk about having a child, you know, or whatever happens with a woman's right to choose or whatever. But once these children are born, they're coming into a world of inequality. So many of them are coming into a world where the parents are not educated, where their villages or where they were born doesn't have a way out, an opportunity for these kids. So I think you're absolutely right. And I wonder sometimes if the people at the UN are speaking with people like you, because you were also a legal advisor for the United States Department of Homeland Security as well.
And I think it's a great point in terms of saying it really matters how you say it. And I think the point most people get is if we say family planning ought to be based on what children need, and everyone should agree that equality of opportunity is what we want, few people would disagree with that. And I think the people that would disagree with it may not be reasonable. And honestly, there are people on the left and on the right, in the center, libertarians, egalitarians, who would all embrace the idea of trying to create equality of opportunity. At the same time, you know, climate crisis denial was in full force 5 years ago. I think you find very few people today who are engaged in climate denial. Even hardcore Republicans are supportive of some reforms to address what the Pentagon considers the greatest threat to U.S. national security long term. So I think if you're relying on people being reasonable, try to mitigate the climate crisis, and smaller families do have 20 times the long-term impact, and you're relying on people to be fair, that it's really not fair that some kids get golden trust funds and other kids get poverty the rest of their lives, in the end, I think people's reason will prevail. And as you said, if you say it the right way, are governments listening? No. The child tax credit system proposed by Congress is a pure growth system. It's both New York Times and Forbes and a former Nobel laureate, Stephen Chu, have noted those systems are pronatal. They're just pushing people to have more kids by throwing money at them. Could those systems be improved? Sure. And our website has lots of changes that the proposal should take on to get towards Fair Start. So one simple thing people could do is to contact their representatives and say, we think that the current spending package, both the infrastructure, family, child, child care, and in fact the COVID stimulus, all of that money should be invested in creating smaller families that cooperate in their planning to give every kid a fair start. That's one way people can act.
That's a great point, Carter. This is Samantha here with you from Zeta and Friends.
Thanks, Samantha.
I have a quick question for you. Does it risk violating human rights and reproductive justice, your mission?
Yeah, so the right to have children, like all rights, has some limits. And we think of the right to speak freely. The right to speak freely is great. But if everyone went into a room and wouldn't let other people speak, one person keeps speaking all the time, won't let others. If there's no organization, if there's no limit, people aren't doing it cooperatively, there's an absence of freedom. And we find the same thing happens when it comes to family planning. If we care about freedom, we'll protect parents' right to have children. We'll also protect the right of future children to get what they need, which is a fair start in life. We'll also protect the freedom of the community, the community needs parents to be ready before they have children and to plan responsibly and sustainably, because we don't want to do things like exacerbate the climate crisis. So what you find is just the way we can speak freely, but we can all agree, hey, you've had your turn, other persons should speak, hey, this person may be slightly more informed on the subject, we should hear what they have to say, you shouldn't incite violence in this room, you shouldn't defame people. Just as we see that limit on the right to speak freely, something like, hey, can you wait until you're ready, and that might mean participating in a health savings account for your child. Can you cooperate with other people so that we don't end up with super rich kids and super poor kids? Can we exchange resources to avoid that? And thirdly, can we plan sustainably? Because if we right now, let's say world population might be projected to go towards about 10 billion, if our family planning changes by 0.5 children worldwide, if we have 0.5 more on average, that could go up to 14 billion. And the impact on our ecology would be disastrous. So is it an imposition on future children to live on their freedom to live in those conditions? It would be. So I think to say, look, let's be reasonable about reproductive justice and the right to have children. That's not an imposition on freedom. It's, in fact, an expansion of.
Yeah. So, Carter, so we should let our listeners who we're speaking with Mr. Carter Dillard, and he is the founder and he's an attorney with the organization Having Kids. It's a national child welfare organization. And he also works with the Animal Legal Defense Fund. He's the director there, right? And so one of the things that I think about when I hear you speak is, number one, if people also put off having kids till they're older and wiser and bolder, then we would see less child abuse too. Because we see a lot of young people having children that causes a lot of stress when they cannot afford the child. They don't have a home for the child. They don't have a good job in healthcare, which we'll be talking about health insurance later. But I'm sure you have some opposition to Fair Start. So who opposes Fair Start and why?
Great. It's a great point. Some sectors of our economy make a lot of money from growth. So it doesn't matter if the children are born into abusive homes where the parents weren't ready. Well, it doesn't matter if the children were born rich or poor. So equity doesn't really matter. And it's a good thing if people are having unsustainably large families, because these sectors benefit from having higher consumption, cheap labor. When we have lots of people, they'll need jobs in the future. It drives down the cost of labor, creates cheap labor markets. And also those people end up paying taxes. You get a massive tax base. Those interests want to see the growth continue, irrespective of the impact on children, on women, and on the environment. And those people oppose Fair Start. A lot of that thinking is behind the current proposals in Washington. Mitt Romney has been blatant about the fact that he wants to address what he sees as a falling U.S. fertility rate as a threat to the country. What he means is it's a threat to Wall Street, to wealthy families like his and his kids who have an unearned privilege in life. They didn't earn that. They're just trust fund kids. It's a threat to that way of living, that we have constant growth destroying the environment with lots of rich people, lots of poor people buoying up a handful of rich people in a country where every day our voice matters less and less as we get drowned out by the crowd. That's his vision of the future. So people like that, people at the upper end of the economic spectrum who benefit from growth, want it to continue. The answer, the response to them is, we have a right to protect our children. They have a safe, healthy future where their voice matters and where there's equality. And that right means that we can do things like moving resources around to incentivize better family planning. Because in the end, the money that he would pass to his rich children, really there's no moral explanation for why that should happen. It should be the opposite. We should be giving kids a fair start.
Yeah, and you know what? It leads to a bigger issue, too. You look at the prison population, and then that's a whole different story with money being shifted there because of contracts for private prisons and all that. But I know, oh my gosh, Carter, this is such a wonderful discussion. I can't wait to speak with you for a meeting later on. But sadly, the segment, the time that Paul is giving me, the time up here.
Mm-hmm.
But give us the website one more time before you leave, so that our listeners could go and look at that website. And I have to say, it's a great website. To whoever built it, they did such a great job. So give us the website so people could go and look on and maybe send some money, donate time, energy, whatever they have to Fair Start and Having Kids.
Thanks so much. And I really appreciate you having me. And it's havingkids.org. And we'd love to get messages from anyone who would love to volunteer, donate, or do anything to assist. Nothing has a greater impact on children, animals, the environment, and human rights and democracy than better family planning. So thanks for having me, Sita. It's always an honor.
You're welcome.
What a fantastic first segment. Thank you so much, Sita. Once again, we are going to take a quick station break and listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Point with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9, Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care Centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home.
Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I'm not sure if I'm on. Am I on, Paul?
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
There you are.
Look at that.
And there you are.
Wonderful. So Samantha has a quick public service announcement before we go to our fantastic guest, Serena Thomas.
I would like to take this moment to thank the Palm Bay City Council. We got this ruling back in 2018 for United Third Bridge on Thursday at 5:30 p.m. at Fred Poppy Regional Park. Will be the official baseball complex and field dedication ceremony. The sports complex will be named after Roberto Clemente Walker, and then the two fields will be named after Jackie Robinson and Hank Aaron. If you're in the area, please feel free to come out and join us. This is a public event, and I think it's an amazing proof of the diversity in culture that takes place in the city of Palm Bay. And thank you, and we look forward to seeing you there.
I swear, thank you. We could take a whole 3 hours to talk about breaking the cycle of generational poverty and everything else in the world, but we're going to give this half an hour to our friend Serena Thomas. And Serena is going to talk to us about the American Rescue Act, health insurance, changes, and so much more. So welcome.
Thank you, Sita. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be with you again in Brevard County.
It's wonderful to see you after all that dancing.
That was so much fun.
Man, what a nice birthday you had. And you know what? You know what?
It was a nice birthday.
I have to tell you, you were a queen for your 50th birthday.
Thank you. Thank
you. You walked like a queen. You danced like a queen. Your attitude, your positive vibes.
Fabulous.
And you know what? Most of my friends who saw those pictures and stuff, they said, we want to be like her. And she can move it, baby. You know. And the thing is, that's what life is all about, right? Once you realize that you are the mover and shaker of your own destiny,
yes,
you plan accordingly.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
and that's it in a nutshell.
I planned my 50th, too. It was the same thing. Remember, down at the Paradise Beach Park.
Yeah, you have to.
Well, it's all about celebrating life.
And an 18-piece band show
right?
up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. It's about celebrating life and celebrating yourself and celebrating the gift of life. You know, I think I mentioned it at the birthday, was that every day is a birthday if you have the right friends and the right family and you have the right attitude. And for me, that's an attitude of gratitude. I wake up every morning and I'm very, very happy to be alive. I'm
right.
happy to have my body, my health. And yeah.
Celebrate, surround yourself with positive people.
Yes.
That's basically what
yes.
it is. So you left Brevard 5 years ago. You and I met because I remember seeing your photograph and you were doing some acting.
Yes, I was doing
And we became really good friends.
Yes.
You did a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
But 5 years ago, you left and you went to Miami and you became one of the sales leader at U.S. Health Advisors.
Uh-huh.
So talk to us a little bit about how you got, well, first of all, your background, how you got into that, and then we'll talk a little bit about the American Rescue Act.
Thank you. Thank you. So I originally got into the industry by accident, actually. My background is a background in sales, and I have been fortunate to have had a lot of success here in Brevard. And
okay,
I definitely had a lot of interactions with the business owners here. And during that interaction, I actually walked into the U.S. Health Advisor's office here locally in Brevard County, and I was able to help them. And I was able to not just become a leader here in sales, but when the opportunity opened up in Miami, they were able to ask me to go and help them with the training and the development of that office. So that's how I ended up in Miami.
Then you went to sell a product, and you ended up getting hired.
Yes, yes.
I read that story.
Yes,
I'm like, what?
Yes, yes. Thank you for doing that. Yes, so I went in there to sell them on a product, and they end up selling me on the opportunity. And, you know, Sita, I'm not sure if you're familiar with my story, but when I was a little girl, when people used to ask me what I want to do for a living, I didn't have an exact occupation. It wasn't, okay, well, I want to be a nurse, or I want to be a scientist, or, you know, I want to be anything. That answer came up all the time. I just want to help people. Well, that's a very general statement, right? It's very vague.
Right. A lot of people say that, but they don't really mean it.
Yes. And so it was, interesting that I'm with a company and I'm in a position where that's what I do every day, is helping other people every day. So.
And you get to inspire people too, because you also train others to do what you're doing.
Yes. Yes.
Which is a plus.
Yes. I train other people, and I also educate a lot of agents, and I educate a lot of business owners. And I do a lot to share my knowledge in not just the healthcare industry, but in life and in general. What are people responding to? What makes us listen to each other? What makes us influence each other? And that's just an energy transfer. If I'm very passionate about something and I come and I speak with you, I'm going to inspire you to exchange that energy. So it's all about the transfer of energy, and it's all about caring for individuals, for business owners, caring for each other as a whole. And that's going to come through no matter if you're doing one occupation or another. People will do business with people that they know actually care about.
Well, it's about trust.
Their business. Yes.
It's about trust and respect.
Yes.
And so you took this one step further, and you got yourself, you're well learned and well informed now about health insurance.
Yes.
And so we just witnessed the American Rescue Act, and mm-hmm. we've seen that trillions of dollars will be spent in healthcare mm-hmm. in the United mm-hmm. States. I mean, I think by 2027, the United States is projected to spend $5.96 trillion, am I correct?
Yes.
In healthcare?
Yes, actually they are. And I just want to stop there for a second. That represents 19.4% of the gross domestic product in the year 2027. Just think about that.
Yeah.
20%
right.
of our gross domestic product will be in the healthcare sphere. We talked about the fact that people have to shop. We have to take our responsibility. We have to be more efficient. You just go to the surgery if it's recommended. We just don't go to the doctor because he's 5 miles away. You know, let's
do your homework.
Yes,
yeah.
let's be efficient. When you shop for a car, you shop based on value, based on a lot of different criteria that's valuable to you. But when it comes to health insurance, we don't shop, and we need to start doing that.
Right. And I was reading what 29 million Americans or more maybe
are uninsured.
So, mm-hmm. so take us through the process for someone calling the phone number, which you'll give us in a minute, and asking you about the Affordable Care Act, about shopping for affordable insurance, and comparing the rates. What happens if, say, Samantha calls you and say, I need insurance?
Well, I'm very excited to actually give Samantha those rates now.
Yeah.
before I'd be worried that she would, you know, come after me because I would be telling her some numbers that she wouldn't want to hear, or
right.
I'd make her angry,
right.
or I'd make her cry,
right?
Yes. Which I've had clients do.
Yes.
And so it's a very tasking position to be in when you have to give people unreasonable rates, because this is not a luxury item. This is a matter of our existence. This is a matter of our health. This is a matter of us taking care of our bodies, taking care of our families, being able to show up for work. If you're sick, you're not going to be able to show up for work. So if you can't afford to go to the doctor, you don't have health insurance, you're not going to, you know, be taken care of. And this is something that's not going to go away. It's just going to keep coming back. So if Samantha were to call me, what I would tell her, first of all, we need to find out what your income is, because these rates are based solely on your income. And I'm very happy to say that based on the American Rescue Act, now those rates have gone down. For the first time in a very, very long time, those rates are actually gone down. So what we spoke about earlier was, you know, the people at the lower end of the spectrum, the people between 100 to 400% of poverty, they were doing pretty good as far as getting a subsidy. The people that really, really, I wouldn't say keep me up at night, but the really people that really weighed heavy on my heart were the people between the 400 to 600% of poverty.
Yeah.
Those are what we consider the middle class. And those rates were not reasonable.
Yeah, and that, now that, they are that's what drives people insane, right? Because the very, very ultra rich can write a check.
Right.
The very poor will qualify for Medicaid.
Yeah, getting help.
But the middle class are the ones, when they go on the marketplace and they see the exchange, they say, oh my God.
Yes.
It's more than a mortgage sometimes.
Yeah, and what happens, Sita, is when they see those rates, they have to make a decision. Okay, am I going to pay my rent? Am I going to pay for my car payment? Am I going to, you know, have to take my kid out of a private school and maybe put him in a lesser school? They have to make life decisions based on whether they're going to get that policy or not. And it really saddens me when someone gets on the phone and I have to tell them a rate and they make that decision, okay, well, maybe I'm just going to take a chance. Right. Because taking a chance is not good. It's
so
not
this
good.
Is where the subsidies come in handy. Yes, so talk a little bit about the subsidies and how it works.
Well, the subsidies, it's just you putting in your income. The government will subsidize a portion of your premium. And like I said, the people that are in those different ranges now are being able to get help more than ever before. So the new law has actually extended the ACA premium subsidies for people who are higher, people who did not qualify in 2021 and 22. It also increases premium subsidies for the lower income people who already qualify. So what that means is if you already have a subsidy in place, you're going to get an increase in that subsidy. And now if you did not qualify for one, now you may be able to qualify for one. The other thing also is that the new law also subsidizes COBRA continuation for those people who were laid off between April 1st and September 30th of this year, 2021. That also includes, the new law also includes new incentives for states that have not yet expanded their Medicaid programs for 2 years. Now keep in mind, not all states have been participating. So this new law hopefully will incentivize those states to participate.
I hope
and start
Florida participates
board.
In it.
Yeah.
We need
We're
Medicaid
always a bit of a skittish. Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. We do.
Serena, when is the deadline for the 2021 open enrollment expired?
August 15th. That is of now. However, the subsidies for the COBRA continuation ends September 30th. So that's when those subsidies will be.
And COBRA is quite expensive when you're actually out of work.
COBRA has
needed
been
to
very,
come up with something like that.
COBRA has been very, very expensive. And what a lot of people don't understand is that COBRA is just you paying the full rate for your employer-based plan. Your employer is not subsidizing that anymore, so now you're paying the whole rate.
Right.
And a lot of people just take it because it's convenient.
That's right.
They don't go out and get shop.
Yeah, and if you look at the ACA, even if you look at those prices, they show you the original price.
Yeah,
it's like $1,500 or
$1,800
a month,
line.
And then you see the red line of how it goes down.
You see the break you're getting.
Correct.
And you say, thank the U.S. government, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of misinformation out there.
Yes.
There is a new lower cost on the marketplace. Mm-hmm. What is happening to where people are just listening to their friends and their family, but they're not going and talking to someone like Serena Thomas at U.S. Health Advisors?
Well, a lot of people will go on the exchange, and a lot of people will try to do it yourself, so to speak. And what happens is they're not looking at the entire analysis of that policy. For example, a lot of people just want a low premium. That's it.
Yeah,
they're
not
looking
the
at the deductible, the maximum amount of pockets. They're not looking at any prescription costs that, you know, tier 1, you know, what's being covered. They're not looking at the possibility.
Home care. If you get ill and you need help at home.
Yes.
Equipment,
yes,
a
yes.
bed, a walker, a wheelchair, yes. oxygen. But
durable
Serena,
equipment.
But how does someone find out if they qualify for the marketplace savings? Do they, I mean, of course, obviously it would be worth their while to sit down and speak with you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's number one. But number two, they'll go on the web, they'll look at it, and they don't understand what's going on.
Right, right.
So how do they know what they qualify for?
So to qualify on the marketplace, you need to look at what's called the modified adjusted gross income. The modified adjusted gross income is going to be your adjusted gross income on your federal tax return. It's going to exclude foreign income. It's going to be non-taxable Social Security benefits, which is including Tier 1 railroad retirement benefits. Tax-exempt interest, but it does not include social supplemental security income. So to find out if you qualify, you need to speak with somebody, because a lot of these things, what happens is when individuals go and they get to that point where they actually have to submit documents, mm-hmm. and they have to bring in all this stuff, that's where they get frustrated, and that's when they start Googling, and that's where I come into play.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And how long does the subsidies last?
The subsidies last as long as your income lasts. Now, what I need people to understand also is that you want to not play around with the government when it comes to getting a subsidy. You don't want to underestimate your income.
Don't lie.
I will tell you, yeah, it astounds me the number of people who are at the high end of income. I mean, I'm talking people that own 5-star restaurants and are trying to qualify for Medicaid. Not a good idea.
That always makes me angry when people try to
but then they don't want you
to try to hide.
Right.
Well, they want to hide stuff from the government, but then they want stuff, you know.
Right. What people don't understand is that when you do your taxes at the end of the year, there's going to be a reconciliation. So if you do not estimate accordingly, you're going to have to pay not just the difference, but you're also going to have to pay penalties and interest. So you don't want to underestimate, you want to overestimate.
So some people call it Obamacare. Some people call it the Affordable Care Act. When people come to talk to you, we've all seen those videos where people will say, do you think Obamacare is a good thing? No. Do you think the Affordable Care Act is a good thing? Yes. Do you ever have to tell people it's the same thing?
Yes.
Yes.
I have to tell people a lot of things. The things that I have to tell people, you would not believe I have to tell people. But what I will tell you is this. It is my joy and it's my honor and my pleasure to do that.
Right, and teach them.
Because I feel like there's a lot of misinformation out there. And it's just, you know, I have that heart of a teacher. So it just, some of the things that I hear and some of the questions that I hear, I mean, I don't know if you saw a video that I did earlier where I actually had a gay woman ask me if being gay was considered a pre-existing condition. And it broke my heart.
I'm sure
because
it
a
will.
Lot of people are worried about this and they're worried about that. I've also had people who, before this enrollment period was so liberal this year, you know, cry with me on the phone. I remember one night working, I was, you know, working 12 hours a day, and you know, you have to put up a tough front when you're dealing with people because you're giving them a lot of information that they don't want to hear. I've had people get so full of anxiety that they couldn't even speak.
Yeah.
And I had to call him back and say, you know what, I'm here for you, or send him a text and say, you know what, when you can speak, I'm here for you.
Yeah. And is there like a minimum requirement to qualify for the ACA? And is there like a maximum when you can't? Maybe because my understanding is everyone should apply. And then it'll tell you if you qualify or not.
Everyone should apply. And the maximums and minimums are going to depend on your
household.
Now, first of all, remember, everybody qualifies for Obamacare. So everyone can go on the exchange and get a plan.
But except not everybody, some people won't get a subsidy.
Some people won't get a subsidy.
That's
correct.
Right.
So there's a difference there. It's going to range. Every state is completely different. So it's important to know what the poverty level is and what those guidelines, the federal poverty level is different than the state. So you need to understand those. Overall, I would say it ranges from about $12,760 to $51,040. For a single person, or $26,200 to $104,800 for a family of four. And what's also cool about this act is that it has put a cap on the spending for an individual. So originally, it was supposed to be capped, but it was, you know, it just kind of got away. So now there's actually a cap. We're not being required to spend more than 8.5%. of income, so that's really cool as well.
And I'm surprised to read this, but you could get a subsidy to help you pay COBRA.
Yes,
I never. No. Tell us about that. That's because I remember when I left a job, which I shouldn't have left, Ellen. I should have called you first when I resigned. And I was paying, I think about, I want to say about $600 a month for Jasmine, Dr. Biggie, and myself. And I completely forgot when I left in disgust. Because I didn't like something, that how they were taking care of a patient, I left. And I forgot that Jasmine was on a particular drug that we had to pay out of pocket for it.
Uh-huh.
Then my husband's medication, I think we ended up spending $2,000 in meds.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're angry, you shouldn't quit a job. You should go home and call Ellen.
When you're angry, you shouldn't do very much.
You should don't go act on emotion.
You should call your friend and say, I'm really ticked off about
when
this.
Emotions are high. Intelligence.
Yeah, but how many people quit their jobs without thinking, well, I do have to pay a mortgage. I do have car payment. I do have health insurance costs. So, I mean, now they're going to help you with the COBRA, because that COBRA, when I got the letter, it was $1,800 a month.
Yeah.
If I wanted to keep that insurance. And I cried for the, they offered me the job back, but I was too proud. I didn't take it.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Well, that $1,800 meant that's what that plan was.
Wow.
And what COBRA is what the employer plan. Now, employers will have a broker that comes in and they'll give them, you know, a buffet of plans. So they'll give them about 5 or 6 different things. Or actually, they're going to give them a lot more than that. And then employer picks, you know, anywhere from, let's say, 5 to 8 plans. And they say, okay, well, this is what I'm going to, you know, what I'm going to offer my employees. So you really don't have any choice except what they have agreed on. And then they decide, okay, what percentage do I want to offer that? I have worked with a lot of small business owners. And a lot of small business owners will pay for the whole thing. Some of them will pay 50%. They'll give a stipend and they'll say, well, we're going to give everybody $100 or we're going to give everybody $500. And that $500, you can do whatever you want with it or you can use it towards your health care. Now, larger employers are required by law to do that. So when you get that COBRA bill, what you've done is now the employer is not paying anything for you. Now you're paying the full rate.
Gotcha.
So then you have the option of going out and shopping for yourself. But a lot of people just get that because it's very convenient.
Yeah.
And so with this new subsidy, what's going on is, you know, if you've been laid off, now this has to be involuntary. You can't just quit a job. Or if you've had a reduction in hours, you do qualify for a subsidy that will help you towards that COBRA payment. So from April 1st until September 30th of this year, that period will be in place.
It'll kick in, yeah.
Now, Serena, what if you opt out to not take your employer's insurance because you're getting a better value at the marketplace?
What is the question?
Like, what if you opt out, you have a job, the insurance rates are out of control, mm-hmm. So you decide to try the marketplace.
So you don't take your employer-sponsored plan.
You have that option. Yeah.
Okay.
No, no one has to take an employer's plan. Now, you won't get a subsidy if you had the option to take a group plan. Because the government looks at it, you had a pretty good option there,
yeah.
And an opportunity there. So we're not going to subsidize your option. To come on, be on board on the ACA, but you certainly do not have to take an employer's plan. You can shop on your own.
Okay.
And I have a lot of, believe it or not, I do have a lot of clients who have done just that because the plans that they were receiving at work were
crappy.
Were not
the
subsidized employer group plan that they had. The rates were not great.
So,
not at all.
So what are notice requirements, and when do they go out?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
What are notice requirements? Is that from the employer?
Yeah, so I believe it's today.
Yeah.
The forms are going to be sent out. They're going to model forms. So if you're an employer and you're mm-hmm. actually administering COBRA and you're required by federal law to have those, to have that in place, the government will send out model forms. So those forms are going to help employers be able to send out the notices that they have to do. The forms are going to be necessary for establishing eligibility of premium assistance. The employers are also going to have contact information for the plan administration, for the plan administrator and any other person maintaining relevant information. They're going to have a description of the second COBRA election so people can see that. So it's going to put some work on the employer's part because now they have to identify those people, they have to contact them, they have to let them understand that they're eligible for subsidy. They also have to let them know when the date is ending for that.
Yeah.
So,
do you see a lot of people my age, won't disclose, but is over 55, that are just working for health insurance? Like they'll call
yes.
you and say,
yes.
My husband's retired and I'm just working for insurance.
Yes. There's people that stay married for health insurance.
Oh,
there's
that's the worst.
There's people that don't quit their corporate job to live their American dream because of
the
health
stress.
Insurance.
Ugh.
There's people who get married for health insurance. There's a lot of things that people do to be able to afford health insurance. And so it's getting easier. Or this year, I should say, we've seen a little bit of a help. A little
yeah.
bit in the direction toward the Affordable Care Act being actually affordable.
Yes.
However, we still got a lot of work to do.
Right. So I know, you know, when the Affordable Care Act first came out, there were a couple of things that were really great about it. You could keep your children on your plan. They could finish college. I think you could keep mm-hmm. them till they're 25. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about it was that a lot of people who owned businesses before and couldn't get health insurance, they were able to get health insurance. Small businesses, single individuals who were going to other plans before and they were like, I can't afford the $800-$900 a month. We also had where people had the personal responsibility, where if you did not take the health insurance offered by your employer, mm-hmm. you did not go on the marketplace, at the end of the year, you paid, when you paid taxes, you paid for not having health insurance. Mm-hmm. And I know, I thought that was a great thing because we always talk about personal responsibility, mm-hmm. but I thought that gave people a chance to take responsibility for their life because if you didn't have health insurance, when you went into the emergency room, it sent up the cost for us mm-hmm. who did have employer-sponsored or private insurance.
Yes, and I do believe in personal responsibility. I will tell you that I'm not sure how I feel about actually forcing individuals to get health insurance. And the reason for that is because when a government starts forcing their citizens to do anything, it's probably, you know, a slippery slope. But what I will tell you is that if you were to force me to do something and it was in my best interest and it was affordable, it probably wouldn't be such a tough pill to swallow.
Right.
What happened was, and you know, what us agents who were on the front line saw is that people were not being able to afford the plans that they were being penalized to get. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I, you know, what I told people, I said, the Affordable
Care
Act is that
they're affordable or caring. That's why we should expand Medicaid. I mean, for those people mm-hmm. who cannot afford to pay for health insurance, mm-hmm. then when we expand Medicaid, it helps those people, right?
Yeah.
But also, it's like almost like, you know, people complain when the government is helping in other areas, but they want to help for themselves. Mm-hmm. That you mm-hmm. can't have it both ways, right?
Yeah.
Either we're for everybody having health insurance as affordable, mm-hmm. or we're not. And I think it's great that you're able to, at U.S. Health Advisors, to help people navigate through the system mm-hmm. to get a health plan that's tailored for their family and their
yeah.
needs.
Yeah.
How wonderful it is that you're yeah. able to help people.
Yeah.
Because healthcare is wealth.
Yeah.
I mean, you
health
can't
is wealth, yes.
health is wealth, right?
Yeah.
And
it's
so,
a blessing.
And the other thing, too, what about preventative care? You speak a lot about preventative care as well. I mean, mm-hmm. we wouldn't need a lot of stuff we have if we took care of our bodies, this temple that we have.
Yes, yes. I believe a lot in preventative care, and I believe it should be standard in any policy. And I myself am very proactive in taking care of my own health. And so I feel, again, we keep coming back to the same place, responsibility.
Right. Give us your website and how soon someone could contact you before we go.
Well, I'll be happy if you call me at 321-258-3330.
Thank you so much. Another fantastic show here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you so much, Serena. Thank you so much to Clark that called in earlier.
Carter Dillard.
That called in earlier. And thank you again for joining in. That's
Carter Dillard.
Thank you so much. See you next week, 1 o'clock Eastern.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.